You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free. And things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Good evening and welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, my co-host and producer, Tim Dennis. This evening, we just got a couple of great speakers coming up for us. The first we're going to be talking to here is Ray Duwalaby. He's from Scars Magazine, and he's going to be talking to us a little bit about the release of his new monthly publication that is going to be coming out. Welcome to the show, Ray.
Hello, Dave. How you doing?
Doing great. Thanks a lot. Hey, first of all, I want to say it was great to meet you this weekend. Thank you very much for coming out to the TAPS paranormal retreat we did out there in Rhode Island.
No problem. Well, I was pulled along by Steve because the Para magazine, which I'm also involved in, was big times.
Yeah.
We're working on the magazine now as I speak, actually.
Well, good deal. Now, you're also in, you're involved with the new magazine called Scars, and that's S-C-A-R-S magazine, and people can check it out by going to scarsmagazine.com, correct?
Yes.
Tell us about the magazine.
Well, I've been a horror fan my entire life, since I could probably see, and me, along with Chris Rutherford and Michelle Wilmot, we decided we were going to create a magazine that touches more than just Hollywood horror. We're trying to get people interested in the art, the models and photographers, the music, the raunch, the DVDs, that, you know, the real gore stuff, and also the Hollywood and anything else that comes along in that same genre.
Okay, and you're also covering true stories, is that correct? True crime?
Yes, we've got true crime. Michelle wrote an article about the BTK that will pretty much raise the hairs on the backs of people's necks. It's incredible.
Great.
So we're going to make sure we have true crime in every issue.
Now you're going to also have reviews of collectible toys, collectible movies, posters, things like that as well, correct?
Everything.
All right, great.
Bottle kits, everything.
Now, how many months are we going to have to wait for the issue to come out, or is it coming out relatively soon?
It will be out in June.
It will be coming out here in June.
Issue one will be out in June, and we've got enough stuff to fill issue two into issue three.
Great. Now, are you looking for people to contribute and write and help get the magazine done as well?
Absolutely. I would love to see independent filmmakers send submissions in. We want to review everything because what we want to do is bring people who aren't relatively known all over the place and try to bring them to the forefront. So anybody that writes, anybody that paints, anybody that does anything in the horror genre, we want them. Just, we're very, very fan friendly.
Great. And you're making that available. How can they get in touch with you so that they can contribute to the magazine as well?
Well, we have a MySpace that is growing by leaps and bounds. So it's www.myspace.com/scarsmagazine, and that's how we really started taking off. And that's how everybody contacts us. Plus, if you go there, you can get everybody's email address. Everybody's email address is posted, and it's clickable. So if you have any submissions, you can click my name, Chris's name, Michelle's name, and it should send emails right to us.
And we'll also put up a link for that. Robin, I'll have her throw it up on our website for both your MySpace link and on the actual Scars magazine link. And also you can check my MySpace. I'll have you guys up in the top 16 friends. So if people are looking for you in a quick way to sign up, they can just click on the link there and it'll take them in for the information.
Excellent. We'll be exchanging links right after this.
Okay, great. Now tell us about how many pages long. Is it going to be color, black and white, a mixture of both?
It's going to be full color, and it's going to be between 52 and 64 pages initially. But I'm gunning for 64 by issue two.
Now, you also have Brian from the Ghost Hunter show is doing a couple of articles, correct?
Brian is writing, reviewing. He's actually interviewing. I don't want to give anything away, but he's landed a couple of really intense interviews, and I say a couple loosely because it's probably like 8 to 10. We'll be featuring the whole cast of an upcoming horror movie that I think is going to be really big, but I don't want to give it away yet.
Is there any truth to the rumor that you have an exclusive interview with Casper the Friendly Ghost coming up?
Actually, it's not an exclusive interview. He's actually living in my basement.
Awesome. You know what, Ray? Wendy would have appeared, but she's such a witch.
Yeah. Oh, God.
So the magazines will be available coming up here in the... In June, will they be available only through internet orders?
Or? Well, initially we're going to self-distribute for the first issue, but as soon as this thing is in print, it's going to go into the hands of some major distributors, and I think they'll like what they see, and I think you'll find it in Borders and Walden's and all the biggies.
Is there anything people can do to request it from bookstores, anything like that, so that they can get it in their area?
Oh, absolutely. They can go in and beg.
Okay.
Go in and beg and please say, I want Scars. Please give me Scars. And, well...
Now, wait a minute.
Define Scars as a magazine.
I don't think that sounds good.
Whip me, beat me, give me a magazine.
Yes.
Yeah, make sure that you tell them you don't want to be cut up. You would like the magazine.
All right, great. So people can take a look for Scars Magazine. They can go online and order it at scarsmagazine.com. Is there kind of a brief outline of what's coming up in the first issue on your website as well?
Absolutely. And we're going to start listing some preview pages so you can see on the net what it is you'll get in print.
Awesome. Did I read that you're going to have an interview as well with Peter Jackson in this first issue?
An interview with Peter Jackson on the web already.
Awesome.
I have some really excellent writers in Hollywood, and I have an interview with Dick Smith, who's the makeup guru, The Exorcist, Altered States, Ghost Story. There's an interview with him. There's going to be interviews with Rob Bottin. I'm very old school horror, by the way. I'm 80s and 70s, so I'm big into real makeup and kind of less into CGI. So I'm gearing towards that, but we will touch everything.
Great, and you're going to do some Romero, right?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, one of the features that I plan on is a complete Day of the Dead interview with Gary Klar, the guy who played Steel.
Oh, sure.
I've met him at a convention, and he's a very incredibly nice guy, so I'm going to approach him about doing a whole Day of the Dead piece.
All right. Well, thank you very much for sharing your time with us tonight, Ray.
And I think I'll hand the phone off to my lovely wife, Morgan Fitch. I mean, Lisa Duvalli.
Great. That's good. We'll talk to her, but we're going to do that right after we do this.
We thought El Chupacabra meant the cup of coffee in Spanish.
Mi amo Eduardo Especial. ¿Cómo está el yay?
What you talking about, Willis?
Shows you what we know. Stay tuned. There's more to come from the darkness on the edge of town.
If you read Tapper Mag every month, you'll be able to tell the difference between the absurd.
I could not go to work because Bigfoot stole my car.
And the creepy. Tapspire Mag takes you where few would ever go on purpose. From exclusive interviews with the cast of The Ghost Hunters to the latest trends in technology, the field of the paranormal. To join our journey, order at tapspiremag.com.
hardly beautiful and barely average. In fact, when they were both born, the doctor slapped their moms instead of them.
I will slap you so hard you end up in the Ming Dynasty.
Welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town with Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis.
Good evening and welcome back to the show. This is Dave Schrader, your host on the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I'd like to welcome all of our friends from the Infinity Paranormal Group and their chat. I hope everybody is enjoying the show this evening. You can email in your questions at dave@darknessradio.com. We're checking those out. If you have any questions for our next guest, you can give us a call at 612-375-1400. Again, that number is 612-375-1400. And Robin, the phone girl, is keeping an eye on the Infinity chat. So if you have questions popping up there, she will relay those over to us and we'll make sure to get those asked on the air. We'd like to welcome our next guest for the evening. Her name is Lisa Dualibi, and she is our final guest of the evening. Lisa is one of the TAPS members for the show. You've seen her this year showing up on the series. Is this your first series? I mean, you're not first series, but first year with TAPS, Lisa, or have you been there with them before in the past, just in the background?
I've actually been with the group about 2 years now.
Okay.
I did a lot of things in the background, worked with the home team, basically, and then went on the show a little bit later on. But as far as investigating and things like that, I've done some home cases and starting to learn the technology side of it just about now.
What do you bring to TAPS? What type of expertise or work are you doing for them?
Well, the big thing that I think I can bring to them is I do a lot of work in anthropology. And that's cultural belief systems, and actually work with forensic and human remains as well. So one of the things that I find really interesting is how different people interpret paranormal activity or perceive paranormal activity. In other words, you know, if you were to see something move, there might be a certain person who might say, wow, that's evil. There might be someone that interprets it automatically as paranormal. There might be someone that interprets it scientifically. And a lot of that may be based on your belief system that you grew up with. So that's one of the things I like to bring to the table. The other thing is, obviously, in the forensic field, you approach everything very scientifically, very analytically. We did a lot with human remains, so if we ever find anything like that, I think I could contribute something.
Now, can you be specific when you say you've done a lot with human remains? Do you have, like, lampshades and tables?
I'm not going to tell you what I do.
Oh, no.
That's all in the basement. We're not going to talk about that. We actually did some really cool things. We work with mummies, Peruvian mummies, Egyptian mummies, some things in actually Cape Cod. We did one that was the Cornhill burial. And what we would do is identify the remains based on, you know, dental things, different pittings of the bone and things like that. We do age, sex. Sometimes you could even tell what kind of illnesses people had. There was a lot of people that you could tell if they had tuberculosis, you could tell if they had even sexually transmitted diseases just by their bones. You could tell how many children a woman would have just by looking at that. So all those kind of things I try to bring to the table when we go into TAPS. And that's the nice thing about TAPS. Everybody knows something different. Everybody brings something different to the table, and we all complement each other.
Great. Now, with being in the background, now you're helping with home investigations. Your TAPS, besides doing the TV show, they're still helping people, even though they don't show it on TV all the time, going into people's homes anymore. There's still a group that does that to help people with immediate needs, correct?
Most definitely. I mean, that's our primary thing that we do. And, you know, we don't want to forget where we came from. We go through cases all the time. We set up home cases. And we'll go in, and especially if there's children involved, we make that our first priority. Many of us have children that are in the group, and we know what it feels like when somebody's, you know, upset about their kids. So those are the cases that we prioritize. But we definitely still go in, we set up the investigations, we use the equipment, we take the time to interview the people, and that's something that we're never going to stop doing. You know, there's still definitely a group behind all those cameras and everything. You know, there's people at home, all of us, that really get involved, and we love it. That's our heart and soul of the group.
Now, you seem to be coming at it from more of an analytical and scientific approach as well with what you're able to bring with forensics and things like that. Do you have a belief in the paranormal? I mean, do you believe that there are things going on out there with life after death?
I actually do. I do, but I'm very, very careful about what I believe. I'm very selective. I look at things very objectively. I did have some experiences as a child, and, you know, I don't want to say to this day that they were definitely paranormal. It could have been my imagination, but you know, I see a lot of death in my workplace. I'm a veterinary technician, just so everybody knows what I'm talking about.
Not like you're working for McDonald's or something.
Right. Food poisoning, terrible. You know, and I see a lot of passing of souls, and I always wonder, you know, where is that energy going, you know? So I really want to believe that there's something, and I do have that belief in my mind. I just need verification of it, and like I said, I'm very careful. I don't jump to conclusions. I need to have that kind of evidence that's going to, you know, make it a scientific field. That's what we need to do. We need to make this, you know, a valid scientific field, and that's what we're striving for.
Now, you mentioned that you had some experiences when you were a child. Are you willing to share and tell us a little bit about what got you into the paranormal?
Sure. When I was about 4 years old, I was in bed, and I actually would hear, and this would go on all the time, kind of a shuffling down the hallway of my house. I had a ranch house, and it sounded like someone was yelling for his mom. It sounded like an older child, and I would hear that all the time, and you know, I would tell my parents, and they thought I was crazy, but I remember very distinctly hearing that every night, and it was the same thing consistently. And even at that point, I would get up out of bed, and I would look around, and I couldn't find anything it could be.
And, now, did you have brothers and sisters that were hearing the same type of sounds?
Well, my brother was really little. Okay. He made his own kind of sounds at that point.
Sure.
He still does that now. But, you know, no, he was very small, and this was definitely, it sounded like a teenage boy. And he sounded like he was out of breath, and he was shuffling, and he was calling for his mother. And it kind of freaked me out, but at the same time, I was fascinated. And,
did you ever do any investigation to find out if there was a death there that happened to a teenage boy or something?
I never did because we moved, and I think I was like 10 when we moved, so I never, you know, I wasn't that advanced at that point to think about doing the investigating. But I did receive a book from my father when I was a little bit older called Strange Stories and Amazing Facts. It was by Reader's Digest. And I think a lot of the stories in it were probably embellished upon, but that just really sealed the deal. I carried that thing everywhere I went until it was dog-eared. It was like my Bible, and that really, really got me into it.
Okay.
So that's kind of what brought me to where I am today. That and combination of the anthropology and watching the animals all the time. Everything kind of tied in.
that leads into my next question. We actually have an email here, and it says, "Hi, Lisa, long time no see. I'd love to hear your comment on your interest in cryptozoology, especially local to New England." And that question comes from Keith and Sandra Johnson.
Oh!
They're the directors, of course, of Near Paranormal, and Keith is one of the demonologists that's worked with the TAPS group and the Ghost Hunter show as well. Now, what can you tell us? You do have an interest in cryptozoology?
I really do. I've been fascinated with that, again, since I was a little kid. I used to do science projects on Bigfoot and Sasquatch and the Yeti and the Loch Ness Monster. And, you know, being in Catholic school, that didn't always go over so well. But you know,
why is Bigfoot Jewish?
I don't know. I think okay. they might be worried about that whole evolution thing, but that's a whole other story.
I gotcha.
But they... you know, they let me do it. They were good about it. But I'm fascinated with that as well because I don't think that we've tapped out all the, you know, all the species there are to be discovered on Earth. These sightings have to come from somewhere, and they're so uniform. In other words, you know, there's consistent sightings of this large primate all over the world. So is this, you know...
And it's been passed down through religious backgrounds, Indian, Native American...
Exactly.
You know,
like
Mayan,
Sasquatch, yeah.
Right.
The Yeti, Sasquatch, you know, and I'm thinking, you know, is there something to this? Is there, you know, I think of Gigantopithecus. That's one of the big things we learned about in anthropology, and, you know, that would be pretty consistent with the sightings of Bigfoot, so that's one of my big things. And then it's really interesting to look at the demographics of an area and see if it could support an animal that large, you know, food supply.
Look, they just have found what they called the Lost World. I think it was last year, like around August, September, October, I remember reading the news story where they actually found an island where they found like 5,000 new species of butterflies. They found birds that they thought had been extinct. They found a couple other mammals that they thought had been extinct.
Yep,
and they found
that's the coolest thing.
Right, they found a couple new breeds of animals that are all new and they've never even seen before.
Mm-hmm. And I really think that, you know, It's a nice and hopeful thing when we can find new things on Earth. I mean, you know, they say, you know, we've gone to the last frontier of space, but if we can find things on Earth like that, you know, it's like a little kid in a candy store. You open that up and there's new species and how they evolved and you know, their function and what they eat and how they live. It's amazing. And I think, you know, they say, well, there's no fossil evidence. They don't find any skeletal remains of creatures. But you have to remember, the soil might be an indicator of, you know what I mean? It might be a factor as far as, you know.
Well, don't you think it could also have to do with, I mean, I thought this was pretty interesting in effect. I didn't know about, first of all, for people that aren't familiar, I mean, the great apes, the gorillas and things like that, were a legend as of about 120 years ago.
That's exactly right.
We didn't know about it, and there was no fossilized remains of these creatures.
Right.
They weren't found, fossils of gorillas weren't found until, I think it was like about 10 to 15 years after they found the gorillas. Isn't that what it was?
Yeah, and that's correct. And, I mean, you got to look at the environment, moist, mm-hmm. you know, a moist environment, the earth, the soil, the, you know, the vegetation, all those things. And if you think about it, there's not many skeletal remains found of any animals out in the forest and stuff. It's very rare because you have the, you know, you have the scavenger factor, you have the climate, you have all different things that are going to contribute to that. And if that's an intelligent being, we don't know, they could bury their dead. You know, we don't
or
really
eat
know
the dead,
them.
Right? I mean, a lot of the animals eat their dead. And
they
why
do.
Not gnaw on the bones? And by the time it's done, there'd be no remains that you'd recognize as a fossilized
correct.
Bone.
That's absolutely correct.
Well,
yep.
you know, the one thing I think is interesting, they've created this whole character, Gigantus Pithecus or whatever it is, right? The giant great ape?
Correct.
But they've come to this conclusion by only finding two jaw bones, I think, of mm-hmm. these creatures. Couldn't it just be, too, that, you know, that... In your opinion, that these aren't even really a whole new species? Maybe it was just a gorilla that was a little bit more pumped up than, you know, anything else? You
well,
know, I mean,
I
there's always anomalies in history. We have 8-foot people.
That is correct. And actually, they've been talking about that with those little hobbits that they found on that island.
Right.
There's a whole debate about that, whether they're actually a whole new subspecies of human that were actually that tiny, or if it was a deformed group of people, that maybe it was a congenital defect amongst that family. So that's always a possibility, and I mean, that's the great thing about science, is it's a puzzle that you're trying to put together, and the jawbones certainly fit into that. You know, I know there's different tests that they can do, and they can tell by the way the muscles fit on the jawbone, and, you know, the relation to the way the nerves and the tendons would line up with the structure of the bone, whether it would be an abnormal jawbone, if it would be exceptionally large for that species. There are ways to tell that. The growth rate and things like that are all marked in the bone. Your bones tell a story about you. So, you know, probably they had a decent idea based on the location, where it was in the soil, and the growth rate and just the shape of the bone. They could probably tell that it was a subspecies, you know, that it was something set apart from other things that they had found in that time period.
All right. We've got a question, another one emailed in to us here from Judy in Wichita Falls, Texas. And she says, Lisa, I just saw the episode of Ghost Hunters where you were at the Stanley Hotel in Colorado. That was a great place, and the evidence you got was wonderful. I know there's a lot of things that go on that get edited because it's only an hour show, and I want to know what you were sensing or feeling during your time there that may have not made it on the air. Other than what was shown on TV, what was your most memorable personal experience while at the hotel, and is there something that made a real impression on you, and where did it take place?
The whole thing made an impression on me. The place is breathtaking. It has a presence all its own. When you pull up to that place, you're just speechless. As far as things that happened aside from what was on camera, I actually had an experience of my own in my room. And
is
it was
this something you want to share with us? I don't know that we're ready
no,
for
I'm
that.
I'm trying to be good.
Okay, go on.
Is that Tim laughing at me?
No, Tim would never laugh at
you.
No.
Yeah,
he loves you. All right, so go on. Now you had an event happen in your room.
I want to hear the experience. Come on.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, and again, we don't look at it
say
as paranormal
slow.
Right away. No, we're just looking at it as something odd.
Okay.
I got up and, you know, it was a queen-size bed and went into the bathroom, took a shower, came out, and the light on the opposite side of the bed was turned on. Now, I would have had to go all the way around the bed, and it was kind of, the bed was up against the wall, so I had to squeeze into the other side to turn that light on. I would have no reason to do that. So that was kind of interesting. I kind of looked, and I was like, that's kind of cool. The other things that happened was Brian and I, actually, his TV kept coming on and off and playing The Shining over and over again when we were investigating, so that was kind of cool. The whole place is unbelievable. It has a feeling and a presence all its own. You know, for me to just name even one thing, there was so much, it was overwhelming. But when that table moved, boy, oh boy, that's the whole reason we get into this field, is to see something like that.
How do you answer the skeptics that think you guys fake the stuff and that there's, you know, editing done in production? I mean, is there any answer you think that you can give people to let them know the stuff's real, or you just think that people are going to come down on the line? If you're a skeptic, you're going to stay a skeptic until the ghost comes and punches you in the nose yourself? Or
I think it's healthy to be a skeptic. I mean, I think that's a great frame of mind, because you're approaching it with common sense, objectivity. You know, you're trying to eliminate all possibilities. So I like when people are skeptical. I mean, I go into work the next day and everybody's like, oh, you know, did this happen? Did that happen? You know, there's a lot of skeptics there. And, you know, the thing is, we're kind of in a no-win situation where if we don't find anything, they're kind of like, oh, you didn't find anything. And then if we find something, they're like, well, that could have been faked. So let me tell you guys, you know, believe me, sometimes I wish they would edit some of the stuff that happens. You know, that's all real. All the fights you see, all the silly things we do and stuff, that's real. And any evidence we get, you know, I mean, I can't tell you, is it definitely paranormal? I don't know, but what you're seeing, that's the raw footage. There's nothing doctored up. There's no little special effects. That's all the real deal. And it's just as exciting for us as it is for everybody that's watching on TV.
You're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town radio show. Our guest this evening is Lisa Duwalaby from the TV show Ghost Hunters. She's been with Taps for a couple of years here and has just started to make appearances this season in the show. We're going to talk more with Lisa about her experiences, more about anthropology, cryptozoology, and we'll do that right after this.
Adopting aliens and giving them good homes since 1953. Just don't tell our landlord.
Quiet, numbskulls. I'm broadcasting.
It's Dave and Tim shacking up in the darkness on the edge of town.
2006 is here, and for many of you, another year has passed without treating you and your loved ones to a much-needed getaway. Rocky Shores Resort has just what you're looking for. Join owners Jerry and Kim Pipp at their family-themed resort that offers a heated outdoor swimming pool, volleyball court, playground, spacious lodge with games and activities for the whole family and more. With 6, 2, and 3-bedroom cabins that are affordable, comfortable, and fully furnished, and 12 seasonal RV sites, Rocky Shores Resorts is perfect for a private escape or for a family reunion. The resort are located on the east shores of Bowstring Lake in the heart of the Chippewa National Forest. Here you can relax and enjoy nature in the Great North Woods, experience dozens of area attractions, and get hooked on some of the best northern perch, panfish, bass, and walleye fishing in northern Minnesota. Call 1-866-878-0101 to book reservations, or check out their website at rockyshoresresort.com for more information. This year, don't ignore the call of the wild. Embrace it and enjoy yourselves. That number again is 1-866-878-0101. Rocky Shores Resort is open year-round. Call today.
Adopting aliens and giving them good homes since 1953. Just don't tell our landlord.
Quiet, numbskulls. I'm broadcasting.
It's Dave and Tim shacking up in the darkness on the edge of town.
Jeff Rusterholz with Edina Realty understands that the housing market is changing, and he's prepared to work with you to put together an aggressive plan to ready your home and help you sell quickly. It's Jeff's goal as your full-service real estate agent specializing in the Twin Cities to provide you with superior service at all times. His local expertise and extensive real estate experience will benefit you whether you're serious about buying or selling a home. By taking time to really listen to your needs and desires, Jeff Rusterholz with Edina Realty will help you find the home of your dreams. And if you're selling a home, his real estate expertise and many effective marketing programs will give you the exposure and edge you need to sell your home quickly and for top dollar. Jeff prides himself on providing unparalleled service, and he looks forward to developing a long-term relationship with you. Visit him online at movewithjeff.com for more details, or call 651-690-8479 to get started on securing your future. That number again, 651-690-8479.
If you read Taps Paramag every month, you'll be able to tell the difference between the absurd.
I could not go to work because Bigfoot stole my car.
And the creepy. Taps Paramag takes you where few would ever go on purpose. From exclusive interviews with the cast of The Ghost Hunters to the latest trends in technology, the field of the paranormal. To join our journey, order at TapsParamag.com.
When Dave was a young boy, he once awoke to find himself staring directly into the eyes of a shadow person. Turns out it was just his life-size cardboard cutout of Donny Osmond.
Go away, little girl. Go away, little girl.
Welcome back Darkness on the Edge of Town.
Good evening and welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. This is your host, Dave Schrader. Our guest this evening is Lisa Dualaby, and it sounds like her bird, I think, has also joined us for the second part of the show.
Is that a ventriloquism act, or is that the real deal?
Oh, I had a little gas. I'm sorry.
Pardon? Wow. Hey, good night, everybody.
I have five birds.
Wow. Now, before we got into the commercial here break, we were kind of talking. You said recapping some of the people on the boards that had just joined us, wondered how you got involved. You had some events happen when you were a little girl where you heard what sounded like somebody shuffling and walking down your hall and calling for their mom, mm-hmm. and you thought it was a teenager or a teenage boy it sounded like to you.
Yep.
You got the book that you read and read over and over again. What was the name of the book?
Strange Stories and Amazing Facts. It was by Reader's Digest.
Okay, and that kind of got you into there. Now, yeah. Sassy, you know, we've been talking about the cryptozoology and the anthropology, and Sassy from our boards is our boids.
Our boids.
That's what's in the background.
What you want to know here, what got you into the cryptozoology and anthropology aspect of it?
I just always love, I love animals, obviously.
Right.
Primates are intriguing to me. I mean, if you watch the way they move and the way they live and the way they act, they're amazing. I mean, we're like one chromosome off from a chimpanzee, and just to watch them interact is...
Come on, I met your husband. Are you sure it's just one chromosome?
Hey, he's a Neanderthal. Come on now. You saw his forehead, you know.
No, Ray's a good guy.
He is a good guy.
Yes.
But, that stuff has always amazed me, and ever since I can remember, I couldn't get enough of reading about evolution and about, primatology. I worked with primates when I was in college, so Sasquatch just kind of fit in there naturally. I mean, it's so much mystique behind it, so it's got the best of everything. It's got an animal, it's got the mystique, it's got, everything. Just all it's scary when you think about it.
Well, let me ask you this. We had a guest on a few weeks ago by the name of Wayne Herschel. Pardon me, getting a little coughing jag going here. Wayne has written a book called The Hidden Records.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of talks about our place in the universe and that maybe we're the aliens here on this planet. And his theory is that, or not his theory, but one that he's talked about that's been out there for a while, is that we came here and we're kind of wiped out caveman and mm-hmm. Neanderthal man. That's why there's no missing link between them and us. Being in anthropology and forensics and things like that, do you see that there might be some credence to that kind of thought?
They do analysis on the bones, so you've got to look at bone tissue and DNA and things like that. So, I mean, there is a relation. We're made up of the same organic matter. So as far as us coming from somewhere else and in that time frame, I would say I'd probably disagree. I respect his opinion. I'm sure he's got a lot that he's based that on, but... If I was going to say anything, I would say if we came from somewhere else, it would be at a very, very much earlier time. I actually read something interesting that said that much of our body is based on bacteria, and in as much as maybe 90% of us, is dependent on bacteria to actually function properly. So if you want to get technical, maybe that has something to do with it. Maybe, if we came from another place, the bacteria had something to do with it, and it's kind of like a symbiotic relationship that went on. I think the
possibility... So now there's all these antibacterial soaps. We're just killing our future.
We're killing ourselves, yeah. But, it's just so cool to think, and quite possibly, could their life come from somewhere else? I think so, of course. I think it would be arrogant to believe that we're the only planet that can maintain life in the whole universe. It sounds narrow-minded to me, so... I don't know if I believe in flying saucers or UFOs per se, but I do believe that there's some kind of life form, out there, and that quite possibly, they may go from place to place one way or another. I'm not sure how.
Tim is a firm believer that dandelions are actually aliens.
Well, my daughter is really good at spreading them all over the yard, so... And she's evil, so she might be part of that plot.
There's about 1,000 of them in my yard, Lisa, and they're all looking at me funny.
Yeah.
Tim's out there.
Probably put them there.
Cutting them with scissors, trying to see if they scream. He's waiting to find the one that's hiding out there. So you've never had any experiences with UFO or any of that type of paranormal?
I have not, but I also find that fascinating. I mean, the whole thing about... you know, the people that believe they are abducted. You know, I'd love to know more about that. Is this a psychological thing? Is it an actual thing that's happening to them?
Well, that leads me to a question. On Saturday night, you showed up to the event for a while and were kind enough to sit in with the lecture that Keith and Carl were doing and meet and greet with the fans. So first of all, I want to thank you very much for showing up for that.
Oh, it was my pleasure. I had a blast.
Now, you and I were watching some of the footage that Keith and Carl were showing of the backstory to the episode that never aired on the Ghost Hunters.
Correct.
With the possession. And, you know, it was kind of intriguing video to watch, and supposedly this woman, who's an older 70-something grandmother, was being possessed by a purported demon, and or an entity who spoke in French. Now, she did know French, so it's not a stretch that she could speak it and speak it fluently.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess normally she's just this real genteel grandma, and then when she'd get possessed, these eye things would happen, and she would talk in French, guttural. And we were both sitting there and listening to this, you know, kind of display that she was, you know, bah, you know, spouting out all this little French terms. And then the one question he asked her, something like, are you sick? And she said, yes, oui.
Yeah, she kind of switched gears there for a minute.
Right, she'd been talking in French for so long, and all of a sudden she goes to two English, and then you could almost see it on her and hear it in her voice, like, oops, I mean, oui.
Yeah.
I am very sick. So, with the investigations that you do, and of course not giving names or anything, how often do you go on an investigation where you guys get the sincere feel that there's nothing wrong, it's just that you're dealing with somebody that has more mental issues than anything else?
That does happen quite a bit. I mean, there is a big theory that many times perceived paranormal activity is actually the result of either a mental illness, a drug dependency. You know, there's all different factors, and those are things that we really look at closely when we do a pre-investigation, you know, scout. When we have our post-investigation discussion amongst the group, we really look at those kind of things, because I can think of several in particular cases that, you know, we went there and these people really firmly believed that they were experiencing paranormal, and us as objective people that came in and approached it completely scientifically and completely objectively could see very plainly that the issue at hand was actually psychological and what was going on in the household. You know, but you still have to treat those people with respect, because what their belief is very real to them.
Right. Do you believe in things like telekinesis and the ability to move things with your mind and that flux of energy?
I'm not sure where I stand on that yet. I've yet to see it myself.
Because that's part of what they believe poltergeist activity is, correct?
Correct.
A lot of times it seems to be centered around usually a girl who's coming into puberty.
It can be around teenagers and, believe it or not, menopausal women, which...
Right.
I can see that.
Right. So it's like an unleashing. So don't you think if that ability and that kinetic energy can happen and cause things to open and slam and shut and slide and bang, that if you're mentally ill and you're not able to shield those kind of outlashes of energy, you know, I think maybe for those of us that aren't having these kind of, I don't even know what the word is I'm looking for here, you know, the PMSing or the, you know, the hot flashes, things like that, where they're things are kind of unleashing, I wonder if maybe most of us kind of shield ourselves from using that ability because we don't believe it occurs. But, you know, when women are in these highly hormonal states, it just kind of unleashes almost like a sun flare to cause these things to happen. And do you think that maybe in a psychologically messed up person who's having trouble holding their own life together, that might be, you know, the paranormal experiences may actually be occurring because they're creating them, not even that they're thinking they're seeing it, but that's their kind of mental outlash and these almost sun flares coming from them that are causing these types of events?
That is a theory that we're currently discussing now. I mean, we try to go into a situation and we look at that very closely, you know, exactly what you said. We say, is there anyone in the house that has a history of mental illness? Is there anyone in the house, you know, that may be a teenager, anybody going through the change of life? And, you know, people kind of step back and go, whoa, you know, why are you asking me these things? But it's very important, because we have found that there is a correlation. We're not sure what that correlation is. You know, that's one thing we're trying to document and actually get evidence of, but we're striving towards that. So So I think you're right, yes. I think there's some kind of release of energy, whether it be because of hormones, whether it be because someone is mentally, you know, having a difficulty, not 100%. You know, I've seen and heard things about people with schizophrenia that have actually had experiences very much like poltergeist activity in their home. So I think it is a very interesting topic, and it needs to be looked into further. Do I believe in the telekinesis? I think it's really interesting. There is some kind of correlation, but I'm not sure exactly where I stand on that yet. I want to see more and learn more about it first.
You know, let me follow up with the question that we had from Keith and Sandra. They'd asked, and I think I kind of got you off topic. They wanted to know about your interest in cryptozoology, especially local to New England. What are they referring to? Is there something special that's only found in New England or purportedly found there?
Well, I know that, you know, there had been discussion. We talked about it last night. There was an albino ape that was supposed to be sighted in this area.
Isn't that called the Ray Ray?
Does it like Kiss?
Yes. Ray is Lisa's husband, as we mentioned earlier. I'm just kidding with him. But go on. So there's a great white ape.
Right.
Well, wouldn't that stand out like a sore thumb, though?
You would think
brown,
so.
Green, you know, even a nice mauve maybe during spring.
Yeah, but, and if it dropped its R's a lot, I would say it was native to Rhode Island.
Right. But white, I mean, you'd think that there would be a bigger chance that you'd be able to see this creature.
Correct. I haven't really heard that much about it. I only heard it from them, you know, when they were discussing it. I know there's the Jersey Devil, which I think more is probably folklore than anything else. But, I mean, anywhere, you know, and New England was the first colonized area. So I'm sure they saw things, and there was legends that were passed down and things like that. You know, it's hard to say exactly. I don't know what Keith is getting at there, but I know, you know, the Jersey Devil, like I said, the one we talked about the other night. Anything that is unexplained is definitely of interest to me. I know there's been large cat sightings and things like that too.
Right, that shadow or the Black Panthers, or is that what it was, Tim?
Yeah, right.
These kind of mythical, creepy Black Panthers that keep appearing in places they shouldn't be. But there are so many people that can get exotic cats now.
Correct.
And have them on farms. And I would think Rhode Island would be the perfect place to have a little farm land area where nobody'd know you're harboring big creatures like that.
Right. And I mean, a lot of people, you know, when they're housing these exotic pets, they don't understand that they need special care. They need special enclosures. I mean, I've worked on, gosh, everything at my place, servals, and we've had all kinds of, you know, large reptiles come in, things like that, where, you know, if you saw that in your yard, you'd freak out.
Right.
You wouldn't know, you know. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, there's legend and there's folklore in every part of the world. New England's no different. And I'd be up to investigate any of them.
But it takes you like 30 minutes to walk from one end of New England to the other. Wouldn't you think you'd run into a giant white ape?
You would think so, yeah.
Going forward with the show and with the stuff you're doing, now they just announced that you're going to be doing a third season, so congratulations.
Thank you.
I know a lot of people think that the episodes that just ended were the third season, but that was actually just the last 9 episodes.
Right, that was
for
the
season
back
2.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're going to do a new third season.
We are.
Jason posted information about it on the site, at MySpace, I know for sure, and that you're going to do places like, I think he said Texas, Arizona.
Yes, I'm so excited about that.
Overseas, do you know, I don't want to get you in any trouble, do you know what can be mentioned yet overseas, if at all, anything?
I think that's still in the process of them making a decision.
Okay.
We're hoping, you know, that we might be able to do maybe one of the castles overseas in Europe. You know, we'll see what happens.
Now, would you guys ever consider taking a look at, you know, if you're out in Scotland, you're checking out the haunted castles and, you know, things like that. Would you ever consider, you know, the Taps Group spending a night out by the Loch Ness to see if, you know, they could see anything?
Oh, I'd be up for that.
Yeah.
Definitely. I mean, there's so much speculation and, you know, I was kind of disappointed when they actually found out that, you know, they didn't think that there was enough food in there to harbor such a large animal. You know, that they did all kinds of studies and stuff, but I still have a little glimmer of hope in my heart that they'll find it and maybe there's a plesiosaur.
Lisa, Domino's delivers. That's all I want to say.
That's right.
You know? He makes all that money off of merchandising that Loch Ness.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, but you know, they charge a delivery fee now.
Yeah. Oh, We don't want to badmouth good people at Domino's.
I'm just saying.
Now, right, I mean, they say the food chain, but now what I'm finding even more impressive, though, is for years, I mean, people were using those little handheld crappy video cameras and old movie projectors that you'd have to hand wind. So a lot of the footage was real choppy and blurry.
Mm-hmm.
Now that they're able to actually see some of this footage, and the digital picture quality is so beautiful, and you'll see what looks like humps rolling through the water.
Mm-hmm.
They'll pan in close, and you can see it is just the way the waves are rolling. And it's a pattern in the water, or the certain amount of birds. I can't remember the brand. I think they're Birds by Nike. My head is gone from this weekend. What sort of species? There's a species of bird that fly right above the water, and they do this mm-hmm. weird flapping thing, and they do it in a big pod
mm-hmm.
where they'll do this. And from a distance, it looks like something moving quick along,
right. Coming
out of the water and bursting. But all it is really just these birds.
Right.
So, I mean, we're finding out more and more about that.
Right. And you're looking at matrixing. I mean, it's the same with paranormal activity. You know, your brain is programmed, it's hardwired to make a shape, to make sense of something that you see. And it's usually something that's in the back of your mind. And a lot of times, you know, we were talking about how predators are kind of hardwired into us. So we may see something that looks like a predator to us or might look like a large animal because that's what we're hardwired to interpret it as. That's our flea instinct from way back, again, going evolutionarily, you know, back. You see these lumps and someone says, well, you know, it makes sense of that in my mind. And it looks like, you know, it looks like a large sea monster.
Right.
You know, and I'm sure that happened a lot. You know, people have stories about sea monsters out in the high seas, and I'm sure that had a lot to do with it, too.
Well, yeah, as they were saying, I mean, the Kraken was a big thing that they'd say these giant tentacles would come out of the water and grab ships. But now they find that there are these actual
giant squid
that will do that, and they can capsize boats.
Right. I mean, you have to realize, I mean, these people had never seen animals like this before. I mean, they just found an octopus with these giant ears that flaps around, you know. And who would ever think, you know, what if somebody way back when found that? What would they think? They'd think, you know, my God.
Alfred E. Newman is mating with the with octopus.
George W.
That's, ooh, now be careful. Be careful. He doesn't like when you're picking on him like that, Lisa.
But he does have big ears.
He's going to get you. He's going to get you because he ain't going to take that kind of abuse. He's got strategy, Lisa.
First Iraq, then we're going after the Duwallabies.
That's right. With her cryptozoology animals of mass destruction. With doing the investigations, what has been your favorite investigation that you've done so far, either that's aired or not aired? I know you can't give too much information about private, but you can tell us without telling us where or who or what. But what's been your favorite investigation so far, and what's really creeped you out?
I think probably my most memorable investigation was when we did off camera, and it was at an apartment where there was a young family, and the children were being attacked, and the woman was having episodes where she was passing out. And I went up there with Kristen Gartland and Keith and Sandra and Mike from NEP, and we were doing the investigation, and it was just amazing. Got some great EVPs. There was some activity while we were there. A door opened, a lock slid, and it's surreal when it's actually happening in front of you like that. It was a very active place, and I'll never forget that one. That one was great. Just, that's, like I said, the whole reason why you're in that field is to see something like that. That's, like, huge for us.
Okay, how about episodes that you've been a part of? What's been your favorite episode that you've done so far?
Oh, definitely the Stanley.
The Stanley,
definitely,
okay.
Yeah. Just, like I said, a breathtaking place. It has a presence all its own, and, you know, the whole place is just amazing. You know, even if we didn't find one thing in that place, it would have been worth going.
With all this investigating and everything that you're doing with the shows and doing this, do you ever think that we're going to definitively prove in our lifetime proof of the paranormal? I mean, real, honest to God, solid proof?
Well, you know, Jason and I have talked about that, and Jason, you know, he always says, we're like pioneers in this field, and it may not be in our lifetime, but maybe, you know, our kids' lifetime, we may be just opening the door, and maybe they'll be the ones that really, you know, make that difference and find that proof. I think right now we're at a difficult stage where we're still trying to make the thing legitimate and make this whole field something that's taken seriously. And, you know, I hope that will happen in our lifetime, but, you know,
great.
Just anything we find would be worth it right at this point.
Now, you are going to be part of season three, right?
Yes.
Okay, great. So we can look forward to seeing you on that. Lisa, I want to thank you very much for your time. Also, thank your husband, Ray, for joining us from Scars Magazine. Lisa Dualibi from the TV show Ghost Hunters and the TAPS team. And again, if you do have problems out in that area and you're looking for help, and you know that you don't want aired, TAPS does still help and do other investigations. And you can contact people at the TAPS site by theatlanticparanormalsociety.com. And is there anybody in particular they should email about cases that won't appear on the TV show?
They can email our case manager file and just follow the steps that are on there. They're very specific, you know, location and activity, and we categorize them, and someone will get back to them.
Great. Well, Lisa Dualibi, I can't thank you enough for being a part of the show this evening. Thank you for sharing your time with us this weekend as well, and I appreciate you being a part of the Darkness on the Edge of Town.
Thank you, Dave. Have
thank
a good
you.
Night.
Have a great night.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town radio show. Again, I want to just take a few minutes. We do have mention our guests that are going to be coming up for next week. We have Patrick Burns, who is the founder and director of the Atlanta area-based Ghost Hounds Paranormal Investigators Network. He's been cast to appear in Court TV's upcoming documentary series called Haunting Evidence. Two pilot episodes were actually filmed and premiered in late 2005. Production on the series resumed this past February, and the series is slated to premiere on the cable network in June 2006. I believe it's this week you'll be able to tune in and see that, so check out Haunting Evidence on Court TV. Then we're also going to be talking to Diana Avena, who is a representative of the Roswell Ghost Tour in Roswell, Georgia, and has been for the last 2 years. She loves introducing people to her city through its haunting tales. She has some great stories that she's going to share with us, so make sure that you tune in and check those out. Got some great other shows lined up for you. We do have, in a couple of weeks, we've got Eileen Dietz, who was part of the original Exorcist movie. She did a lot of the makeup, creepy version of the Linda Blair stuff. She was also that creepy ghost face. If you go on our website under darknessradio.com and / show, you'll actually see a picture of her with that creepy makeup on. She's going to be on hand to talk to us. Not only has she had some neat experiences while filming the movie The Exorcist, but she also lives in a haunted monastery with her husband and has some great stories to share with us about that. And July, as I mentioned, we're going to be talking to people that took a part in the event that took place this last weekend. We want to thank everybody that came out for this from all over the United States. We want to thanks especially to the TAPS crew that came out and helped us out. You guys, everybody was great. We appreciate it. If you have EVPs, pictures, video evidence from this last weekend, please send it out to us. And please also post on our boards. Tell everybody about the trip. If you liked it, pass it on through the MySpace place, My Paraspace, and also on our boards at darknessradio.com/discuss. Got great shows coming up for you. We've got even better things coming up in the future. Remember, Rosemary Ellen Guiley and Jeff Bellinger are going to join us here at the end of the month to talk to us about dreams and nightmares. So you're going to want to think about your dreams, to have them analyzed from Rosemary Ellen Guiley, and you can talk to Jeff live about nightmares and see if maybe he can help you understand a little bit more about what you're going through. Tim, thank you very much for being a part of the weekend with us this weekend. Had a great time. I hope you did too.
Oh, yeah.
It was great meeting all the listeners. I hope we earned some new listeners and fans. Again, we want to say a very special happy birthday to our friend Robin here, the phone girl. You're listening to The Darkness on the Edge of Town.